Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. It's June 5th, 2006, and this is the last ever Bob Enyart Live broadcast, apparently, tomorrow being the end of the world. The world is scheduled to end tomorrow. At least that's what we heard. Coming back to the U.S., we were in Greece the last 2 weeks, a Bible tour of Greece. Every couple of years, we go to a Bible country, and it's so much fun to study what we can learn looking at the archaeological ruins, getting a guide who really knows the language, the history, and being in Greece. We had 26 people, and from people who've come before with us, they said, and I concur, this was our best trip ever. And a lot of it was because of our tremendous guide, Kostas Sevas, who is a Christian believer in Greece, which 97% of the country is Greek Orthodox. But boy, was he great. And we came back with so much that we learned of the archaeology and history in Greece and the language that come together to help corroborate the story of the Bible, where atheists said, look at the New Testament, look at the book of Romans, this is not true in ancient Greece. Look at the book of Acts, this is not true. And archaeologists time and time again uncovering inscriptions, the evidence, the stones tell the story and affirm the historicity of the New Testament. It's so exciting. So we learned all this great stuff and we come back and find out. Now, tomorrow is 666. June 6th, 2006, and that's it, the end of the world. It's going to be over. This is our last broadcast? Boy, that's discouraging because we had so much more to cover. So much more. In fact, of what we learned in Greece, I'm not sure how to communicate it all. I know that we're going to put it in our sermons at Denver Bible Church, and also we will do a Bible tour of Greece MP3 CD, where I will narrate photos, you know, the best photographs we took as a group at the different sites, and it'll blow your mind. It is so neat. I'll give you one example. This is a good example, but I'll give you one. There are other great examples. But the Apostle Paul, who lived back then, and he was in Greece twice in his missionary journeys, second and third journeys, he mentioned in Romans 16, verse 23, that the treasurer of Corinth, named Erastus, was a believer and sent his greetings to the Christians in Rome. And so the higher critics in Germany in the 1800s, the atheists, the skeptics, that's one of 1,000 arguments they make against the Bible. And they say, we know the history of Corinth, first century Corinth, extremely well. It was a major city, and we know that there was no treasurer named Erastus. That's an unusual name for back then. And the treasurer of the city is normally one of the wealthiest people in the city, and there's just no Erastus. So that's more evidence that these books were written a century, a couple centuries later. They were fabricated. And so there. And so Christians have to, what do you do? It's there was no internet back then. There were no DVD backups for the computers back then. So a lot of the basic day-to-day history has been lost, although, you know, much of it has been retained through archaeological digs that have uncovered inscriptions and through historians recording details, but not everything. And so we're stuck. They're like, there was no Erastus, and it's hard to disprove a negative. So anyway, archaeologists in Greece have continued to excavate ancient Corinth, and 5% of the ancient city has been uncovered, and it's extraordinary. And so they dig down through some trees and shrubs, bushes, and they dig down through 50 feet of dirt. They wanted to get to the level of the main street going through town. And they get down there, and they find the street, as expected. They're expanding the part of the city that's excavated, and they come across a huge inscription about 10 feet long and in big letters. And it says, I, Erastus, now he wrote in Greek, I, Erastus, treasurer of the city, paved this road with my own funds. It's just so cool. It's just like a practical joke that God played on the atheist. Because their arguments, the archaeological digs, time and time again, have refuted the claims against the historical accuracy of the Old and New Testament. So that is a lot of fun. All right, now, once again this year, we see that homeschoolers do very well in the National Spelling Bee. In fact, what do they have? Approaching 300 students involved in the national finals. And it turns out that homeschoolers are overrepresented by 600%. That's pretty extraordinary. There's about 2% of the students in the country that are homeschooled, and public schools have about 90% of the kids. The public school students are underrepresented by about 20%, and this small group of students overrepresented by 600%. There's 37 homeschool students in the National Spelling Bee, and every year it seems to be like this. In fact, it's increased from last year. There were 12.5% of all the students at the national finals were homeschooled. This year, 13.5%. And we're proud of the homeschool students because our culture tends to downplay homeschooling or to suggest that somehow it's inferior. And we see the evidence all around us that homeschool students are just doing great. In fact, we'd like to honor one of our local homeschool students, Brady Cox. Brady, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, Brady, we've heard about you here at the studio that you did rather well, and you've gotten admitted to one of our great schools here, the School of Mines. So
yep.
Tell me about your homeschooling career.
Well, I started homeschooling when I was about 5 years old.
All right.
And my mom taught me, and my brother is also homeschooled.
And were they younger or older?
My brother is younger than me, 3 years younger.
All right. So that means he was always a few grades behind you.
Yes.
Was there a dynamic there that came into play? Did you help him occasionally?
Yeah, I did get to help him. And it really helped me learn to approach problems in a different way. So it was like not only did I get to teach him, but I also got to learn from him.
Wow. So when it came to standardized tests, you know, a lot of people are worried that if they homeschool their kids, they won't do as well academically. And here at Bob and Yurt Live, we've been saying for years that the homeschool kids generally do very well academically and typically outperform public school kids significantly. What was your experience with standardized tests like the ACTs or SATs or whatever?
Well, I found them to be pretty easy. They all seemed about the same. I did pretty well. I was 97% on all of them in the nation.
Wow, 97th percentile?
Yeah.
That including the ACTs and SATs?
Yep.
That's tremendous, Brady.
Thank you.
And your mom, she has a master's degree in education?
No.
She doesn't?
No, she doesn't.
What was her level of education?
She graduated high school, and that was it.
All right. Well, that's pretty neat. Hey, we just spent 2 weeks in Greece, and on the way back in the Athens airport, we ran into a public school teacher. She'd been teaching for 30 years. And we had one of the young guys from our church with us, Josh Craddock, and she heard that he was homeschooled. And she started going into this whole rant about homeschooling is dangerous because the kids are not socialized and the parents don't know how to teach the kids. And so Josh and I sort of ganged up on her and gave her the statistics and the evidence. And she was pretty much blown away. And she admitted that the public school kids end up, you know, academically inferior. And the social environment in public schools tends actually to be dangerous. Not only is it not fabulous, but it's actually dangerous.
Yeah.
And so we asked her at the end of that, we said, so from now on, would you change your position and urge parents to homeschool their kids? Because she said earlier on, if you're really concerned about kids, you're going to tell the parents they should put them in public school. And she admitted step by step that homeschooling does better academically and the kids are so strong socially. But she couldn't make that leap and say, well, therefore, I'm going to recommend homeschooling. She couldn't do that. for whatever reason. So 97th percentile, and now you've been accepted to the School of Mines?
Yes.
That's a prestigious university here in Colorado, and of course that's engineering, right?
Yes.
Yeah, geology and searching for oil and gas and all that. How about, when did you graduate high school?
I finished my schooling last year.
Yeah.
Before the summer. But
So how old were you?
I was 15 at the time.
You were 15 when you graduated high school?
When I finished, and then I couldn't take any of the standard graduation tests.
Why not?
Because there's a bunch of hoops you have to jump through.
Right.
You take the GED.
Right.
Which is the equivalent of a high school diploma.
Right.
So what I did is I just took 2 years, studied real hard, kept up with my books. When I got, the day after I turned 17, I went and took my GEDs.
Right.
So technically I graduated just
the day
earlier
after,
this year.
The day after you were 17, but you actually finished through your 12th grade curriculum when you were 15.
That's correct.
Brady, that's why we have you on. We're proud of you. That's so neat.
Thank you.
And that's not really unusual for homeschool. I mean, it is an extraordinary accomplishment, but we hear it now and then around the country that homeschool kids, they have the opportunity to excel because there's not 20, 30 other kids holding them back. And so with mom or dad, usually mom, the teacher, then you could excel as quickly as you want to go. That's just tremendous. All right. Hey, Brady, anything else you want to tell the audience about homeschooling from your experience and to try to encourage other parents to try it out?
I would just say it also helps the relationship. I love my mom and I love my dad very much because they were right there for me the whole time I was growing up.
Wow. Wow, that's about the best thing you could have possibly said. All right, Brady. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you.
Okay, we appreciate Brady Cox for coming on the show. And we reached him at work, a local manufacturer, Sashco Sealants. If you need caulk, you could check out their Big Stretch or Lexel. That's the clear caulk. And if you're building a log home, what do they have for log home chinking? They got log jam, right? They got great products there at Sashco. And Brady Cox is working there, getting ready to start at the School of Mines in September. And that's just, it's really thrilling to hear from a young man his positive experience homeschooling. And then when you sum it up, aside from scoring so well on standardized tests, and Brady says, well, they're all pretty much the same and they're all pretty easy. Well, what did you score? Well, 97th percentile. And that's out of 2% of the nation are homeschooled, and those homeschool kids do so well overall. It's just so exciting. It's really thrilling. So we need to find ways, creative ways, to encourage more and more parents to try out homeschooling. If you absolutely can't homeschool, then please consider, where should your kids go to school? Should they go to a godless education system? If you think, well, probably the best thing for my child is a godless education system. If you think that, then you'd want to send them to a public school because that's a godless education system. We asked this teacher in Athens. Now, she was flying out of Greece just like we were and headed back to Boston. She taught in the Boston area. And we told her about Adams City High School here in the Denver area in Commerce City, where it made national news. 108 babies were born in one school year. They took the state title that year, 108, and Gateway and Aurora came in second place with 80. But, and she actually said this. She said, well, in Boston, we don't have the problem. We're talking about sexual immorality in the schools. And she said, well, that's not a problem in Boston. And Josh Craddock, who's a homeschool kid, he said to me, you know, later, he didn't want to be rude to her, but he said, Bob, she's either naive or lying. That's the only two possibilities. What, Massachusetts doesn't have sexual immorality rampant in their high schools? Are they all virtuous pilgrims or something? The Puritans are rising again in the Northeast? New England. So he said, and he didn't say it mean or rotten, or he said, Bob, she's either naive or lying. And I thought that was a good point, a good assessment. So we have homeschoolers doing so well, and we need creative ways to figure out how to encourage more parents to homeschool. And so if you can't, if there's no way to homeschool for some reason, say you're a single parent, quite often married people, they both work, and parents have looked at their children's education and thought, you know, the most important thing we could do in this world is to train up our children in a godly way. And so there's nothing more important than raising our children. And we live in a nice house, but, you know, we could downsize, and then mom doesn't have to go to work. And going to work for mom anyway tends to be so very expensive. You know, just the cost of mom going to work tends to be extreme. And so when you take the cost out of her take-home pay, you realize, you know, she's not making all that much, really. Now, that's not true for everybody, but it's true for some millions of families. So they look at that and they say, you know, we could reconsider, make some small adjustments to our lifestyle, and mom stay home. So we missed the first few years of the kids going to daycare, which tends to be a nightmare. If you can have a family like, you know, grandma or something like that, watch the kids, that's way better than somebody making $8.50 an hour watching, you know, 10 kids. But if mom could stay home, you avoid the whole daycare nightmare scenario. And then mom is raising the kids, which moms tend to prefer to want to do that rather than getting stuck in rush hour traffic and putting up with whatever the politics of the office and the workplace. So if they have that opportunity, mom stays home, and then she could homeschool the kids, and dad could help out in the areas that he has expertise in, whatever that might be. And Josh Craddock, this public school teacher, wanted to know, well, how do you get socialized? And he just sort of looks at her. And she said, how do you get experiences outside of the home? And he said, ma'am, I'm in Athens right now. I mean, I am in Greece. Spent 2 weeks studying the archaeology and the ancient history of Greece. And I'm a homeschool kid. And so that part of it is so neat, that the opportunity outside of the home with homeschool groups in the neighborhood. And Josh said, once a week, I go to one family's home. They're really great at science. And my brothers and sisters, they take whatever, piano, violin with different families. And I go to this other teacher for math, or another homeschool family for math or whatever. And we're part of a homeschool group of a couple hundred kids. And we get together, and it's really fun. But if you can't, if there's no way you can homeschool, if you want your child to have a godless education, then you go to public schools, which you should consult with God about that. You should pray and say, God, would you like me to put my child in a godless education system? Could I get your approval on that? I mean, that's awkward even asking the question, isn't it? Going to God and say, God, what part of my children's upbringing should be godless? I mean, how do you even ask that question? If you were there at the burning bush and God was there, say, God, the Philistines, they have a godless education system, and they come by with their Philistine chariots. They come to the center of each village, and we could put our kids on a Philistine chariot and send them off to godless Philistine public school, and it's all free. You think that'd be good? Should we take advantage of that? Now, back then, God was intervening more directly in the affairs of men in order to provide us with the Bible and give us his message that would last through the duration of human history on earth. And so today he's not interacting in that way. But back then, pretty much what he would do is, if one tribe got together and they said, we're going to send our kids to the godless Philistines to be educated, God would take that tribe. And first he'd open up the earth beneath their leaders and suck them down alive into hell. Then he'd send like fire and brimstone from heaven to get the people in outlying areas, and maybe a plague or two. And he'd ask the other tribes now, are you guys going to send your kids to a godless Philistine school? And the other tribes would say, well, not this school year, they would say. And God would have mercy on them for the next, you know, couple semesters. And then it'd start the process all over again. So Christians should know. Now, non-Christians should pull their kids out of the public schools if they care about their kids' socialization and academic performance and education. There's plenty of reason for non-Christians to pull their kids out of public school. But then Christians have their relationship with God. And then if you could homeschool your kids, and we hear this over and over and over, the extraordinary relationship that homeschool kids end up having with their parents. Really neat. And you know that I personally destroyed my first marriage, and we had Josiah and Nathaniel, and I destroyed that marriage many years ago. And I lost custody of our kids because some of you who are longtime listeners of Bob and Yurt Live, you know the story, but I spanked my stepson 5 swats on the backside and ended up, we had so many trials, jury trials, appeals. We won an appeal, more trials, and finally they got me, and I was convicted. And as a result of that, Cheryl and I lost custody of our 4 kids. Just utterly, utterly devastating. And we lost custody, and my eldest boy, he ended up, you know, just in a devastating situation, thrown into a public high school, a devastating situation. I don't want to describe it, but it was devastating. And so then we eventually, our kids are older now, and we got custody. I got custody of Josiah and Nathaniel back. And Josiah, his life had been virtually ruined as a teenager. And I got him back, and he was a basket case. Now, this was my fault because I destroyed our first marriage. If I hadn't done that, then he would not have been exposed to this godless education system and godless guardians and all that nightmare. Well, I got him back, and his life was crumbling. It was a disaster, and so we decided to start homeschooling. And we spent, he was pretty old then, he was an older teenager, but he still had a couple years to go. And we homeschooled, and I homeschooled him. Normally the mom homeschools, but he was like, you would need a whole team of horses and reins and all just to pull him to the books, to open the books. So I said, Josiah, your life as you knew it is now over. Your life is over. And your only friends for the next 2 years are my friends. And when I get up early to go to the Y to work out, you're getting up early to go to the Y to work out. And if I go to a prayer meeting, you're going to a prayer meeting. Whatever it is, and I will be your homeschool teacher. And we did. And, you know, he resented it and fought through for quite a few months, but we hung it in there. And my relationship with my son, Josiah, with all our kids, but with Josiah, is as wonderful, as special, as tender, as loving as could be. It couldn't be better. He has a beautiful wife, Shana. He found a Russian Jew from Moscow. Spotted her, married her. Good job, Josiah. Now they bought a home, a beautiful home in Arvada, Colorado. And I could not be more proud of him. And I just shuddered to think, if I would have accepted the common wisdom that he needed to be socialized in the public schools, that's where, you know, drugs are available, at just all you have to do is ask somebody, and immorality, and just a nightmare. So if I would have accepted that wisdom that he'd really be better off, boy, wouldn't that have been easy for me? Instead of taking 2 years in that challenging situation. But I'm so thankful that God has taught us you have to have courage. You have to not give up on your kids. You never give up on your kids. And, you know, sometimes you have to have tough love. Sometimes if they're older and if they're doing wrong, you got to kick them out or whatever. But you don't give up on them. And So it's just been extraordinary. And our experience now with homeschooling has been great. And then if you can't homeschool, Christian schools, but only if it's a tremendous Christian school. And in all our years and my travels around the country and all the Christian schools, the private schools I've been involved with, and here in Colorado, Maranatha Christian Center is, I believe, the premier Christian school. Just none other like it. And so we suggest, if at all possible, homeschool. If you simply cannot homeschool, investigate and find the absolute best Christian school in your area. And if you can't do either of those, then just maybe you could like wrap up your kid and mail them somewhere. Mail them somewhere where the schools are not godless. I don't know where that would be. It's probably illegal to mail your kid somewhere. But don't, whatever you do, don't send your kids to a godless school, to a godless education system. You will regret it. You will regret it. If not now, when we meet the Lord and you find out the eternal missed opportunities that came from sending your kid to a godless education system where the curriculum is designed to put a wedge between your child and you. That's the purpose of the curriculum, to wear the kids down so that they will question, doubt, reject their trust in God as their creator and the absolute principles of right and wrong that God has revealed in his word. That's the goal of the curriculum, to get the kids to reject all that, to believe that they're animals, that they've evolved from animals, that there is no creator, there is no judgment day, there is no such thing as right and wrong, that sex, you have sex when you think you're ready. How's that for a standard? And the teen magazines, we had an article we did on the air. They said, try to make sure you're ready when you have sex, and try to make sure you know your partner. We suggest getting his name before you have sex. They actually wrote that. Was that 17 or one of those magazines? At least find out his name first. How's that for getting to know your partner? Now, here's God's answer to that question. Don't have sex. You're worth waiting for. Do not have sex until a man commits himself to you for life. Then, in the context of a marriage, then you have sex. The public schools today, increasingly, they will not use the word marriage. They think that word is discriminatory. The word marriage. You're listening to Bob and Yurt Live. We'll be back right after this.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. Now, how is it that I missed this story? Hi, this is Bob Inyart. You're listening to Bob and Yurt Live, and our website is kgov.com. This happened in Littleton, Colorado, which is not very far from the KGOV headquarters here in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. Littleton, that's where Columbine High School is. And this story was in USA Today a year and a half ago, and I come back from Greece, and here it is on my desk. How'd that happen? Anyway, this is just a crack-up. This guy goes into a dentist office with a toothache, and his name is Patrick Lawler, and the dentist figured out what the problem was. He was complaining that he had a toothache in the roof of his mouth, which is a bit of a weird place for a toothache. The dentist did an x-ray. In the x-ray, you could actually find it online at usatoday.com. But the dentist did an x-ray, and he said, I found the source of your toothache. And Patrick said, oh, what is it? He said, you have a 4-inch nail going into your skull from the top of your mouth. It's like, how did this happen? What did you do? Try to eat a nail and it went up through the top of your roof of your mouth? And Patrick explained, you know, he didn't realize at the time that he got a nail shot into his skull. But then once he found out it was there, and you got to see it, it's just unbelievable. From the side angle, it looks like it goes right through his eyeball. But he said this is what happened. He was working in Breckenridge, a beautiful ski resort in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. And he dropped a nail gun. When he dropped the nail gun, he sort of looked down to the ground to see it. And he didn't realize that it went off and the nail shot up into his gaping mouth and went through the roof of his mouth, between his eyes, into his skull. And he didn't know it. He didn't know he was shot with his own nail gun. And he had, it's just unbelievable. So he just didn't realize it. The nail gun sent a piece of nail into a piece of wood nearby. So he thought that was the discharge. He didn't realize another nail went into his mouth. Now, how do these things happen? This is like utter confusion, right? So some people believe that God is the author of confusion, that God predestines these little practical jokes. And you know what else is funny? You know how you are talking to someone and it's somewhat confrontational and you're trying to think of what to say and you can't quite get it out. And as soon as the situation is over and you're in your car driving away, then you think of what you should have said. Imagine that. What does that happen? A million times over every hour? Around the world. And some people think that God does that to you, that God is the one who doesn't want you to think of what to say at the time. And then just to give it to you, he makes you think of the perfect thing to say 1 minute too late. What's with that? It's just too weird. Anyway, this poor guy, he got a nail in his mouth. He was nailed, and it's just because of it was a fluke. Jesus said, by chance. Remember Jesus said that, by chance? So, anyway, he's apparently fine now. And what I really wanted to do this hour is to introduce some of our newer listeners, especially people in Iowa, to a monthly magazine that we put out back 13 years ago. It's called The Rational Inspirer. Now, we discontinued it, you know, for lack of interest or funds or something. But it was great while it was being published. It's called Bob Enyart's monthly magazine, The Rational Inspirer. And here on this issue, June 1993, I've got it right here. Doesn't it sound good? It just sounds good. Sounds solid. The headline story for this whole issue is Adam City takes state title, 108 babies in one school year, a record. And then on the cover, the artwork on the cover, there's a pregnant cheerleader with her pom-poms over her head. And, you know, she's 9 months pregnant. She's heavy with child. And there's a scoreboard in the background. And it says Adam City Eagles. That's Adam City High School. Adam City Eagles, 108. And then Gateway, Aurora High School, Gateway, 80. So Gateway took second place in the state runoffs in the finals for the most babies born in 1 year. And what I thought I would do is open up this issue of the Rational Inspirer and just relate a couple of the articles to you and see what you think about it. We published, how many of these? We used to print about 1,000 of them. We sold them. Remember Rush Limbaugh did a bake sale in Fort Collins, Colorado? These were selling like hotcakes up there. They were selling like homemade chocolate chip cookies. And we sold a lot of them back then. But, okay, let's see here. Now, in this article, we reprint a resignation letter that I had sent to Adams City, Adams County, District 14. That's the public school district where Adams City High School is, where they had 108 babies born in 1 year. And I resigned because the school decided to start giving out condoms to the kids. And I did research and found the statistics and the evidence that that would increase teen pregnancy, not decrease it. So I wrote that up, and they didn't care about that. So I resigned and sent this resignation letter, and it was published by one or two local newspapers. And then 3 years later, when the number of babies born in 1 year continually escalating hit 108 babies, the Rocky Mountain News republished my resignation letter, which is almost unheard of. It was pretty neat. Maybe I'll read that to you later in this show. But then, there was a tragic situation where one of the public school teachers asked the kids in one of her classrooms to define oral sex. And that was sort of gross. That was teacher Vicki McRoberts. And so that the Colorado Education Association sent me a threatening letter that they were going to threaten me if I ever mentioned Vicki McRoberts again or brought up this incident again. And so they end there. And we republished the Colorado Education Association letter in this here, this issue of the Rational Inspirer. And at the end of it, it says, we will continue to monitor this situation and should legal action be appropriate, we will not hesitate to do so. And so in this letter, maybe I'll read this to you later also, they said that I have to stop, you know, saying this about this teacher, that she gave out this this exercise for her class. And so anyway, we would call, whenever I would do a story about Vicki McRoberts, we would call the Colorado Education Association, and we would tell them that we're not really confident on their ability to monitor the situation. And so we gave them a heads up. Today on the radio, we're going to talk about Vicki McRoberts again. So let's see. Let me go. Okay, here's a comic. We put cartoons, comic strips in these things, and we got one here. A dad is sitting in his comfortable chair, and the mom has a notice from the school, and Johnny's sitting at a table doing his homework. And mom says, we got a note from Johnny's teacher today. It says that tomorrow they're going to mess up his mind. Now, that would be nice, wouldn't it, if they sent you a note and say, beginning tomorrow, we're going to mess up your kid's mind. But they don't do that. It just sort of creeps up on you. And all of a sudden, your kid is dysfunctional. Then at the, let's see, then we have a cartoon, Visual Aids, with a professor, and he's showing the effectiveness of a condom to prevent AIDS. And he shows the HIV molecule, the virus, the HIV virus, and it's like 1/50th of a micron in diameter. You see the little guys there. And then the average hole in a condom is 5 microns. So like, you know, a couple hundred of those things could get through an average void in a typical condom. And then an average sperm cell is 50 microns in diameter. So it's like 10 times wider than the average void, the average hole in a condom. And so the professor says, and remember, girls, you can only get pregnant 5 days a month, but you can get AIDS every day. Good point. And even at that, condoms have a failure rate, a significant failure rate, depending on what survey you look at, but at least 15, 18% a year. Is that right? 15 to 18%? That's what we've read from the Alan Guttmacher Institute. That's Planned Parenthood's expert research division. So that's called visual AIDS. A little play on words there. And then at the very end is our superheroes segment, every issue. This one was Yartman versus the Pat Woman. Pat Schroeder, longtime pro-abort U.S. Congresswoman out of Denver. And high atop the KGov towers, overlooking downtown Denver, the Pat Woman lays a trap for the Cape Conservative. But even the element of surprise can't stop truth, justice, or the American way. Or can it? And then you get into the whole, you know, frap, wop, boom, you know, the battle between the good and evil. The Cape Conservatives punches the Catwoman, no, the Pat Woman, in her face. And he says, here's a little something for the way you sent taxes through the ceiling. Pow, try some right. Sort of funny. Anyway, now let me get to one of the articles. Okay, here we go. At Adams City High School, there's a picture of the students with holding their babies, right, in the diapers. And there's a dispenser, like a Coke machine, only it's condoms, 32 flavors, on the school grounds. And we did a live program from the high school parking lot. And the superintendent came out and the principal, and they didn't want us to do this. And they asked if we had a permit. And we said, no, we don't have a permit, but we're going to broadcast today live. And they said, well, you can't. You don't have a permit. And so we said, well, if we need a permit, we'll get a permit for next week, 5 days in a row. So you decide 5 days in a row next week or today, just now, with no permit. And they said, go ahead and do it. So we did it. So the headline of this article is Bob Talks with the Homeboys and Girls at Adams City. So let's read it here. Okay, and a lot of this is a dialogue between me and the students of Adams City High School. It starts out, Bob is speaking. Juan, that's one of the students there in the parking lot. Juan, you told me when we first got here why you thought the nursery was growing so rapidly. Why is that? Now, the nursery was the high school nursery for the girls having babies. I mean, 108 babies in 1 year. You put in a nursery and it encourages more girls to have babies. And Juan said, because the guys are, and I don't even want to read it. It's sexually vulgar. So Juan, why is the nursery growing so rapidly at your high school? Because the guys are blank. And then he laughs. Ha he. And the girls. And I ask, and the girls, who is more so, the guys or the girls? And the girls in the group, they shout out, the guys. He's talking about being sexually promiscuous, but he's talking about it in a vulgar way. And the girls shout out, the guys are more promiscuous. And Juan says, both. Both. And the same girl, one of the girls says, the guys, and she's giggling. And then she says, we're all equal, sexually promiscuous, and she's giggling. Now think back 30 to 40 years. This is commentary we put in the article at this point. Think back 30 or 40 years before the schools put so much emphasis on desensitizing the kids towards sex and ask, would a young girl have been giggling in a parking lot in front of others, adults, students, teachers, administrators, and her peers, and on live radio and laughing about being promiscuous and giggling? Would that have happened? I don't believe so. Girls back then would have been ashamed, I think. There may have been some somewhere back then, but these two little girls just happened to be the first two that walked up to the microphone. The only two we had spoken to up to that point. And then as we go on, it gets worse. But this is the class of kids that are coming out of our public high schools. So the girl says, yeah, we're equally sexual. And she giggles again. And I ask, equally sexual? Earlier, we talked about condoms. The school has been giving, and we broadcast this live, right? Then we took the recording and did the transcript. The school has been giving out condoms to stop girls from getting pregnant, and you gave us a demonstration, Juan. What did you do? And Juan says, I pulled one out. And he did. He pulled one out of his pocket, his shirt pocket. I said, would you pull one out now so the audience can see it from the crowd? There's a crowd of people around us. Can you see it? Is he holding up a condom? And the crowd in unison said yes. So I said, okay, Juan, do the students here use these condoms quite often? And Juan says, no. And the girl says, no. And I said, now, what is your name? And she said, Heather. I said, why do you think the students are being given condoms, but they're not using them? And Heather said, probably because they think it's a waste of time. And then Christine, one of the other girls, we got her name earlier, she said, yeah, and she giggled. And Heather said, it feels better without one. And she giggled. Now, these are, I'm calling them girls. They're little girls. They act like little girls. They're giggly little girls. And the public school system is excited to get them into sexual activity. Many public school administrators are excited about the kids becoming sexually active. And forget about the public school teachers, the male teachers, the young male teachers just out of college with a classroom of 13, 14, 15-year-old girls. Forget that whole story. That's a nightmare story. So Heather says, it feels better without one. Then she giggles. And I say, okay. And Juan says, better without one, but next time you could have a baby. So he was paying attention in class, right? He understood that part. But I asked Juan, do students here use these often? He said, no. And he knows that you might have a baby, but what's happening is they're being told that sex outside of marriage is okay. Just take precautions. And they don't really care about the precautions. They're thrilled. They have the okay of the adults around them to have sex. And so the girls who used to be the final frontier, the last protection between themselves being used by men and that harsh world outside, that line of protection is now destroyed because they've been taught that you shouldn't put up that protection. It's fine for you to have sex. So I say, you may wind up getting your homegirl or girlfriend pregnant, right? If you have sex with her without a condom, right? And Juan and the girl say, right, yeah. And I ask, what if you use a condom? Is there a chance you might get pregnant? And the girl says no, and Juan agrees with her. How's that one? And then we add commentary in this article from me. All right, I asked the kids why they aren't using the condoms. Obviously, they're having too many kids there. According to the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News, 108 girls gave birth last year. Statistically, that would suggest that there are another 50 or 60 abortions and a handful of miscarriages. So we're approaching maybe 175 or so conceptions. Of course, Planned Parenthood has said that condoms fail 18% of the time, except when used by young, unmarried, minority women. Then they say they fail 36% of the time. How's that one? That's from the Guttmacher Institute. Alan Guttmacher is a past president of Planned Parenthood. Better than one out of three, for one out of three women, young minority women using condoms, one out of three become pregnant. This is all published in Planned Parenthood literature. And Adams City High School is, I think, a majority of young, unmarried minority women. So I asked them, if you use a condom, is there a chance you might get pregnant? No. They'd never been taught that. They have never been taught that condoms fail. I thought what Planned Parenthood and the public schools wanted to do is give kids accurate information about sex. They're liars. They are liars. Many of the male administrators of the public high schools, they get physically excited, I mean sexually excited, at the thought of these young girls running around the hallways having sex. And the young guys teaching in the high schools with the 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old girls in front of them, you don't even want to get into that subject because that's a nightmare. And as a Christian father, you're going to send your daughter there? So Adams City High School has a majority of young, unmarried minority women, and they think condoms are 100% effective. First of all, I asked, why is your nursery growing? They answer, because kids like to have sex. Smart kids, that's true. Next, why aren't they using condoms that the school is providing? Because it feels better without them. Hey, this is the kids are telling it the way they see it. So then let's go back to the dialogue from the live radio show at Adams City High School in Commerce City, Colorado, just north of Denver. I ask, Heather, if some guy had AIDS and he wanted to have sex with you, but he said, I'll use a condom, would you let him? She said, no. I said, why not? She said, I don't know. There's a chance you could still get it. There's a chance you could still get it. How do you know that, Heather? Just from hearing it. So then I ask, wait, what did this lady say here? The girl said, because you just told us. And she giggled. And I said, but you haven't been told this before, as far as you know? And the girl said, no. So I said, how is it that you know that you might get AIDS even if you use a condom? And they said, because I just heard it. I said, where did you hear it? And the one girl standing there said, because you just said it. I said, have you ever heard that before? And she said, no, we never heard that before. We never heard that before. How's that? So let's see. But you haven't been told this before, as far as you know? The girl says, no. Okay, so I ask her, what's your name? She says, Michelle. Michelle, have you had a sex education class or anything like that? Michelle says, like in middle school? I said, in middle school? What grade are you in here? Michelle says, I'm a senior. You're a senior, so you learned about condoms in middle school and not since? Well, it's been talked about here, but not like seriously like you are now. How's that? She said, condoms have been talked about here in school, but not like seriously like you are now. How's that? I'm a talk show host doing some absurd live broadcast from the parking lot of the public high school. And she said, well, this is the most serious information I've ever been given on condoms. And Planned Parenthood says it's our goal to teach students the truth about sexual behavior and about birth control. Right? They lie. They lie. It's their goal to get kids sexually active and then to kill as many of the babies as possible. We're out of time. Check out our website, KGov, KGOV.com. And we'll read more of this, but if you order anybody from Iowa or any new customer, ask for one of our Rational Inspirers and we'll send you this copy. God bless you. KGov.com.